Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It is 50-50 football, 50-50 football on a Monday, looking back at the weekend's games, but always having to look forward a little bit as well, certainly at this time of the season. You can't revel in a victory. You can't enjoy the misery of a defeat at this stage of the season, because all you've got to do is look nervously at the table. I'm speaking to a few different people today who've had to do a fair bit of that over the course of the season. And top nervous man number one is Gito Clewellyn to talk to us about Swansea City. And Gito, let's be honest about this. There was a time when it was looking, you were only looking upwards, and now you still are looking upwards, but now you're looking upwards thinking, oh God, how are we going to turn this around? Desperate for a win, says Fabianski after the game at the weekend. He's very accurate, isn't he? This is a football team desperate for a win, and it's not helping them.
Yeah, it's been a bizarre season all round, but I think the last time I spoke to you was just after we beat Burnley, which was 6 games ago, and it was our best performance of the season. After that, you know, we were, I can't remember how many points clear of the relegation zone, but things just seemed to be on the up. And I think what I said back then was what needs to happen now, and I just said, well, nothing needs to change, just keep everything the same. And sadly, we haven't done that. And I saw a damning stat today that in that match against Burnley, we had 9 shots on target, and in the 5 matches since then, we've had 9 shots on target, which tells you quite a lot, really. We've picked up 1 point from a possible 15. We've lost to the likes of Hull, to the likes of Bournemouth, who was still in the relegation battle back then. We just lost to West Ham, which left them off the hook. We drew against Middlesbrough. You know, damning, really damaging results against teams which you would have been hoping we could have picked up at least a point against some of these and got a few wins too, which would have put us in a much healthier position.
Yeah, you've stolen my notes there, so I'm a bit cross with you. those shots on target figures are really shocking, aren't they? And it seems to me like the team, when they had nothing to lose, seemed to play with a lot of freedom. We saw them come to Anfield and play like, you know, just go for it. And then ever since it's kind of got a bit more real that they're looking like they're going to stay up, they seem to have gone in the shells a little bit more. Is that right?
Definitely. I think a common problem throughout the season is that the team's mentally fragile. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it doesn't take much to knock them off balance. And over the last few games, we've really seen that mental fragility shine through. You go back to that first match after Burnley against Hull, and we actually started that game very, very well. But things just went against us. You know, a really poor refereeing decisions. We had 2 key injuries to our only fit right back and to Fernando Llorente. And he's, you know, one of them's still out. Llorente's trying to find his way back to fitness, but is struggling. And little things like that have just completely shattered us, really. It's hit us very, very hard. And at the moment now, well, against West Ham on the weekend, they just looked like they were broken, really. I mean, there was tiredness, there's no doubt about that. They played the game less than 72 hours after a really bruising encounter with Spurs. But you know, there was also that attitude problem. They didn't really look like they believed that they could win, and they didn't look up for the fight, which is a major concern at this stage of the season when you look at where they are.
Looking at where they are, it is now in the bottom 3 against a Hull side that, if nothing else, look as though they've got it in their back pocket at home. It's fair to say, you know, you can see a Hull route to say 38 points at the moment without having to feel as though you're going absolutely mad. Whereas Swansea, you mentioned them being mentally fragile. That's what for a period of time they didn't look. And he's been relatively stable. The one thing I will point out is during these games when there's not been enough shots and all that sort of stuff has been the absence of Clarente, which I think has hurt them a little bit.
Oh, definitely. It's been massive. And I think what Paul Clement did when he came in, he established a sort of starting 11. He identified his strongest team. That was the team that he wanted to sort of keep us up. And as soon as injuries started kicking in and maybe, fitness issues with one or two players after a long, hard season, it's become more difficult for him to keep that team together when he's had to look for others to come in and fill the gaps. One, he's been reluctant to make changes and sometimes has played players when they really shouldn't have been played. And secondly, he just struggled to find that replacement. And Llorente has been the real key man. He was so integral to everything that we were doing in attack, not just in the goals he was supplying, but his holder play was sensational. And he distracted players like no other player could. And in his place, we've had likes of Jordan Ayew playing up front on his own.
Wearing number three, by the way, which is a relegation offence in and of itself.
It really is, isn't it? That should have been an
obscene. It's obscene, I'd say. I'd say it was obscene.
It's one of the worst I've seen, if I'm honest. It really is. That's quite unforgivable. And it kind of sums up his time too at the club. He's just not quite managed to find the right position.
He's took number three because he's got the goal return of a left back. That was his rationale.
And that is quite scary, but it's true, unfortunately. He's just not looked right, especially when he's playing up front on his own. You need a target man really in that kind of role, or at least somebody who's capable of holding up the ball, holding on to the ball under pressure. And Ayew really struggles with that. And it's just, we've not been able to find that rhythm since Llorente picked up that injury, and he struggled to shake it off. He came on against West Ham at the weekend for the entire second half, had a few good moments, but you could see his mobility is really affected. He didn't look comfortable with that injured ankle.
He'll get another week under his belt of rehabilitation before the Watford game, and I think after that point as well, the games are every week. What I was going to say was, when you're talking about belief, one thing I think is, I think we can underestimate how much footballers sit around in dressing rooms and look at each other and go, who's going to be our way home today? I think we do it at all levels, even playing sort of six-a-side. You'll sometimes think, well, we've got him, and we know if we get it to him, he can stick it in the back of the net. And I do wonder about this, that whether or not, what the big boost, the thing that returns a bit of form, would be the idea of, of Clement being able to just select from the start Llorente over the next sort of the next six games, really, and play to him, and everyone else then goes, listen, we remember this. This is what got us playing good stuff early in the season. I mean, that could be a way for the side to settle itself down a little bit, perhaps.
I'm hoping that's the case, because I'll be honest, if Llorente isn't fully fit for the remaining matches, and not just playing with while injured, he needs to be fully fit to get the best of him. I think we need that if we're to have any chance of staying, because as you mentioned, the teams above us really are capable of getting wins between now and the end of the season. We're yet to prove, if I'm honest, in our current run of form, that we are capable of getting as many, of course, what we need now, more points than them over the coming games. And it does need somebody to just lead by example. We've spoken before about the lack of leadership in the squad. It's easy to rely on Gylfi Sigurdsson, but he's been carrying the team all season, and he's struggling through fatigue now. He does look more and more tired, and if he doesn't have other players to take the burden off his shoulders, then he's just going to get more. He's just going to find it more and more difficult, because opposition teams are going to find it easier and easier to defend against us. So it does need somebody like Llorente to come back and just lead from the front and take a bit of pressure off of Gylfi Sigurdsson and give other players in the side options to aim for. It's so massive that for the rest of our season.
Are they having to move Sigurdsson around a bit as well? I think I've had a few complaints that he's not been playing as much in the number 10 just because of injuries in other areas.
He's been playing, actually, since Paul Clement came in, he's played most of his football out on the wing, but he's been given a bit of freedom too. He's not been staying out on the wing. He's been drifting inside into dangerous positions. And that's worked better when Leroy Fair has been on form. And in fairness, I'm certainly not a Leroy Fair fan. I think I've been one of his harshest critics probably since he arrived at the club, and before he arrived at the club, for that matter. But since when Clement came in, he really did start getting the best out of Leroy Fair on a regular basis. Recent games, he's slowed down. He's not holding on to the ball as much anymore. He's getting brushed off the ball far easier than he was before, when he was looking like a bit of a tank in the midfield. He was distracting players in the middle of the park and giving Sigurdsson that little bit more space. Now that, you know, those players in the middle of the field have got a little bit less to focus on with Fair, now that he's slowed down a little bit and stopped having the same influence, Gylfi Sigurdsson having to put up with a bit more attention from the opposition. All of these things are just adding up and making life a bit more difficult for us. And it's all just part of this overall theme of us just losing a bit of energy at the moment and just running out of steam at a critical point.
So it's, I mean, if I was looking before to see what the other guys from Jack Cast were saying and optimism, and I noticed there, I think it was Steve Carroll said he thinks you probably need 3 wins out of the last 6 games to stay up, looking at what other teams are doing and things like that. And it needs a real turnaround to do that. As you say, you know, 4 losses in the last 5. And as you said as well, the kind of teams you were losing to. It's sort of difficult to see where Swansea get that run of form from, isn't it? I mean, you know, players back might help. But at the moment, you know, there isn't too many signs that you're suddenly going to get those 3 wins, is there?
No, you can see where the 3 wins can come. And we've got Watford away, they've been mediocre all season and they've got nothing left to play for now. We've got then Stoke at home, and Stoke have had a really, I think, probably a disappointing season from their point of view. They don't really look like they're clicking in the way we'd usually expect them to. And then we've got Sunderland away, second from last game. So those are 3 winnable games. Yeah. But when you look at the level of performance against West Ham, that's what concerns you. Are we capable of actually playing to our best and taking advantage of winnable games like that? I mean, we've also got games that we can pick up draws. And we've got West Brom at the end of the season, which, you know, they won't have anything to play for then. And they've definitely slowed down recently. Man United have probably got their eyes focused on the Europa League now.
Interestingly, you've got Manchester United after the game, after they play the Manchester City derby away. And again, you know, at this point of the season, fixture lists begin to play a part. They're obviously playing Thursday, Sunday, Thursday, Sunday, Thursday, Sunday for 3 consecutive weeks now. So, you know, even there, you can say, you know, you've got 3 points at Anfield. You can have the idea of, well, you know, it'll be a hard game, but if, and this is the key part, isn't it? If Swansea are playing well, all of these, there's not one of them I'm looking at thinking, you know, that looks like it would be absolutely, it's not like you've got Chelsea or Spurs, or even possibly say, you know, Liverpool or City at this stage of the season with a nice little break in between. Everything you can make an argument for, but it's all impingent on the team playing well.
Yeah, other teams in this league, I mean, Crystal Palace have got worse running than us. There's no doubt about that, but Crystal Palace have got that momentum. I know they drop points against Southampton, sorry, the other day, which was a bit of a surprise after what they did at Chelsea. But sure, you know, they do seem to have more wind in their sails than we have at the moment, and that's what we've got to overcome. It's a difficult time of the season to really generate momentum out of nowhere, but that's a test of character, really. And the players have got to show that they're up for it, and that's what disappointed us most of all. I think against West Ham was, while they looked tired, they also just looked like they didn't have it in them to raise their game and really seize the opportunity against. I mean, West Ham were awful too, it has to be said, but they were still better than the Swans. And you know, that you're just calling on the players now to show what they're made of, show how much they really, really want this, and find that effort from somewhere that's required at this stage of the season to keep us up.
Are they going to do it?
If I was a neutral looking now, I'd say no. But you know, realistically, we're still only 2 points off the Hull City. Despite what some of our fans may say, you know, that Hull are far from unbeatable. They're not going to win every single game for the rest of the season. It's still in our hands. If we perform to the best of our ability in the last 6 games, we will stay up. But I have my doubts on whether we will actually do that.
Those fixtures sound quite nice to me. I've got more hope for you than I had when we started.
Yeah, I've got a bit of hope for it. I like those fixtures. You know, Watford away, Stoke home, Man United away, Everton at home, they're rubbish. Sunderland away, West Bromwich Albion at home. I've got a bit of that. I shouldn't say Everton are rubbish. It's meant to be the neutral show, but you know what I mean. I'd like to think that all Evertonians listening, though, I'm joking, first and foremost. All right. Great to speak to Gito. We're going to shoot off now and find out what else has happened down at the foot of the table. From Swansea over, well, via France to talk about Burnley with Tyrone. Tyrone from the Lancashire Telegraph, always great to speak to him about what's happening with Burnley. And It's a massive 4 points this tie round, isn't it? The 4 points that they've got there, Burnley, over the last couple of games, it keeps Middlesbrough very firmly in check if they were a concern. But also the win midweek just took the pressure that had just begun to come back on, it just took it off.
Yeah, that win on Tuesday night was absolutely massive, really. You know, after the defeat to Tottenham and seven games without a win and the gap being down to five, there was, you know, sort of Sunday, Monday, there was a few nerves about. You could sense people were just starting to get a bit jittery, looking over their shoulders and thinking, you know, hang on, from 2 months ago, thinking we don't have no part of this relegation battle. There was suddenly a looking over your shoulder element, and people were a bit concerned that they were going to be dragged into it. So I think the win on Tuesday really sort of eased those fears. And it's amazing what a win can do, you know, from people suddenly, you know, fearing relegation. The message after the game on Tuesday from a lot of the players was wanting to finish in the top half. So one win can just sort of change the outlook. And then getting a point on Saturday, again, like you say, it was a point that suits Burnley a lot more than it suits Middlesbrough. And that tally of 4 points, I mean, I think they've probably got enough now. And I'd say they've easily got one more win in them. So I think they'll be all right from here.
Yeah, it's funny you say they've easily got one more win in them, because that's what Burnley have felt throughout. I saw quite a funny tweet from the week with someone saying, oh, people say the Premier League's unpredictable, but there's another 1-0 win at home for Burnley. And it's right, really, isn't it? In a good way, Burnley have become quite predictable in terms of what they've been able to do to teams around them or below them or just slightly above them at home. And that's kind of really what's got them through. And that's why I've never particularly worried about Burnley, is that, you know, you've always been able to look at the fixtures and pinpoint the wins and the players have been able to get them.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that home record, it is remarkable. 10 wins out, I think, 15 home games now. And it is the nature of the way, like the game against Stoke, you look at it and you think, it was another game where it was 50-50, perhaps with Stoke were just edging it. But throughout the season, every one of those tight games at home, Burnley have found a way to win. And that, you know, that's where all the points come from. Lots been made of that away record. And, you know, it's poor and you can't get away from that. But their record at home is just incredible. And it's those tight games, every single one of those tight games, they've found a way to win, often just 1-0 or 2-1, just edged them out. And it is the teams around them. You know, I think they've beaten pretty much every team around them. I mean, early in the season, they lost at home to Swansea and drew at home to Hull. But since then, whenever they've played someone sort of eighth down at home, you know, they might not be dominating the games, they might not be looking the better team throughout, but they're finding a way to win. And it is that home record and those wins against those teams that is going to keep them up.
One of the things that I noticed from the highlights of the game at the weekend, and also if you go back to the Stoke game, and I've noticed throughout the course of the season, is exactly how strongly Burnley are finishing matches. I think that there's such a degree of fitness there. I think that's one of the things that, you know, and again, it makes sense. If you're Sean Dyche before the season begins, you're getting your lads in and you're saying, you're coming up against sides where you've got to run twice as hard, so we're going to get you twice as fit. And it's an easy sell, if you know what I mean. At the minute, they look like a set of players who believe it. I thought the end of the game against Middlesbrough went, as I say, and they saw the highlights, but it looked from afar as though Burnley had gone, and the likely winner was Burnley. And the only thing stopping Burnley, I actually thought, from going on and taking the points in the end, was the idea that they were shattered. That they haven't done it before. Whereas they're coming up against lads who were shattered, who haven't had the same intensity throughout the season and throughout the summer. And, you know, I think it's of enormous credit to everyone, because this is, you know, it's a victory for graft, this, what Burnley have achieved this season.
Yeah, you know, the manager always gives a big sell on the fitness, and, you know, most press conferences talk about fitness stats in the previous games and the fact that they are covering more, you know, they cover more distance than pretty much every team they play against. But, you know, it's sort of what gives them their edge, because on an even footing, you know, player to player, they're not the 12th, 13th best team in the Premier League, probably. But when you've got that fitness edge, it does count for something, especially in those tight games. And they have finished a lot of games strongly at home. The number of times they've scored late on to win games sort of last 15 minutes is remarkable. And again, like you say, on Saturday, they did finish strongly, and they do have that fitness edge. They cover more ground than the opposition. They finish stronger than the opposition in it. You know, it's just a little competitive advantage that they have over these teams. And I mean, I tend to agree with you with, you know, the fact they haven't won away. It's almost like they're scared, the wrong word, of winning away. But they don't, at home, in these tight games, they'll find a way to get it done away from home. They just can't quite get over that line.
On that, you know, you said there about finding a competitive edge. The other thing that I've noticed as well, watching the last few times I've seen Burnley, is it seems to be almost like a quite deliberate tactical approach to reduce the game to a number of different personal battles, and then expect that your team wins enough of their personal battles to get a result. And that obviously means that when you're away at White Hart Lane, that's a lot harder. But when you're at home, if you can just sort of reduce a lot of this stuff to, you know, you're not quite, I'm sure Sean Dyche isn't saying to them, but what I mean by this is you're not quite as good as your opposite number. But if you're smart enough and I know you're fit enough and you know you're fit enough, you'll find a way to win your personal battle. And I think that's really interesting because it'd be wrong to say it's not a tactical approach. I think it is a tactical approach, and the number of second balls that are created in Burnley matches that Burnley players win, for me, is testament to how Dyche has thought this through all season, how he sort of reasoned, if we do this, we can find a way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think they do try and turn games, especially to more into a bit of a battle, whether that's, you know, starting off with personal battles and then dragging the opposition into sort of a collective battle. It's something that has served them well, and I think they kind of pride themselves on the fact that teams, whoever it is, teams don't enjoy playing them and don't want to play them. You know, there's probably a lot of teams looking at the next fixture and thinking, oh, I've got Burnley, God, that's going to be a nightmare. You know, people are going into it thinking this is going to be a horrible game, it's going to be tough, it's going to be a battle, and, you know, they pride themselves on the fact that people don't enjoy playing them and don't want to play them. And it's something that really, you know, it gives them an edge. It's why their home record's so good, even away from home, although it's not falling for them. You know, the games recently, they've not lost by more than one goal in a long time. You know, the 2-1 defeat at Anfield, lost 2-1 at Arsenal, at Tottenham, at City. Even these games now, they are making them a battle. And I think teams are coming off the pitch thinking, God, thank God that's over. And when teams aren't looking forward to playing you, for whatever reason, even if it is because they're being dragged into a battle, then, you know, you kind of got half the job done there.
On who's playing well across the board, really. I've been very impressed with Barnes. I think he's... You know, he's not a tidy footballer, but he's hugely intelligent. I think that I expected when he came back into the side, and he has a little flurry at the start, I expected Andre Gray to actually do a little bit more in front of goal, if I'm honest with you. But in the meantime, I think that, you know, you're looking at Barnes, and it's, as I say, he's not, he doesn't make a load of passes, he doesn't do anything like that, but he shifts his position, I think, brilliantly around the pitch. He'll do 20 minutes on a flank, he'll do 10 minutes, drop it into midfield, into the centre, he'll then go and play up front and trouble people. You feel as though he's almost like Dyche's utility weapon. He's going to go somewhere and make it really, really hard for his opposite number.
Yeah, I think he's a really intelligent player. He doesn't get the credit he deserves on that front. People kind of see this old-fashioned battering ram of a player, and he sums up that element. It must make it horrible for them to run, you know, tread on their toes, living in his armors, a lot of that sort of stuff. But he's also a very, very clever, shrewd player in terms of the runs he makes, the space he creates for others. He's been on Saturday, but in midweek against Stoke, he was on the bench. He came off the bench. And, you know, it was his sort of 15-minute involvement that really helped Burnley see that game. He was very clever in the positions he took. There's a lot of sort of tackle fouls in there that killed any momentum Stoke might have been building. It was a real intelligent 15 minutes where, you know, he didn't do anything particularly brilliant with the ball or anything like that, but it was one of those cameos that just completely killed the game and made it safe for Burnley. And he's very good at that sort of stuff. Like, I think he's a real sort of, he's a real Sean Dyche player in the way he sees the game and the way he goes about it.
As you said earlier, it's a chance for Burnley to look up now, isn't it? And just kind of looking at the table, they're only 1 point behind Watford in 10th, and Watford are hardly flying. In fact, it's sort of very inconsistent. They're in a group of a number of teams on 36 points, and the kind of teams that they're there with, you know, Stoke, West Ham. You know, Burnley can be rightly proud to be on the same number of points as them at this stage of the season, you know, anyway, because, you know, they've established Premier League teams. There were teams who were aiming for kind of top eight finishes, and so... Yeah, there's no reason why Burnley can't sort of target that 10th place spot when you look at, you know, the teams who are around them. And that'd be a phenomenal achievement, wouldn't it, when I think most of us have Burnley to go down.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to finish top half, I mean, just to stay up would have been a fantastic achievement. And they're, you know, they're a bit of the start of the season for that. But if they do get a top 10 finish, then yeah, I think it'd be an absolutely incredible achievement. I think you'd be playing the manager of the year territory if they get a top half finish for... It's not best squad in the Premier League, but crafted it out. And you know, people did have them as favourites to go down, but I think they really learned a lot from 2 years ago and the season they had in the Premier League 2 years ago, and they started slowly and it was new to the manager, it was new to a lot of the players, and I think they've sort of realised now what you need to do and how it sort of works in this league and how you get points in this league, which they've picked up a lot at home. And 2 years ago, they had a lot of these sort of games at home where it was 50-50, pretty even, and 2 years ago they were drawing them or losing them, whereas this time around, they've got that experience. They know how to do, and winning it, and you know, there's probably another, at least one more home win in there, and that might be enough the way things are going to get them a top half finish, which would be an incredible achievement and something to build on for next season.
Okay, huge thanks to Tyrone. We're going to be chatting to Leicester and Middlesbrough very, very shortly, but always good to hear from someone who's very, very upbeat about the side.
From Burnley, we go to Leicester, and we speak to Pete Selby, a man who should be ridiculously excited despite a 4-2 defeat against Everton. Pete, Atletico Madrid, the quarterfinals of the European Cup. It is, it's probably everything you were hoping for and aiming for and dreaming about, really. Is that right, Pete? Or would you rather have had one of the even bigger boys?
I would have rather had one of the even bigger boys, really. I wanted to go to Munich, but I'm pretty sure 28 degrees sunshine would be absolutely fine for me in the next couple of days. It's red hot in Madrid, and there's a few fans gone over already. I'll be going over in the next 24 hours or so. And, just basically, from now on, whatever happens, happens. You know, we've more than exceeded what we hoped we would do with the last remaining English club. I mean, what's weird for me is that you look in the Premier League now and you look at teams in the mid-table. Yes, there's a few sliding towards the bottom, but there's teams out there who have nothing to play for the best part of a couple of months. And we're still in European competition. It's crazy. Easter and we're still in Europe. It's madness. But it's going to be really difficult. But again, it's just from now on, it's just enjoy it, basically.
But you're going in really good form, aren't you? Obviously, there's the loss at the weekend, but he's rested 4 or 5 there. Generally speaking, you know, how you've done in the league recently, the style of play that's back, the fact that the players seem to be enjoying it a lot more and just a lot more confidence as a result of that. You know, you're going into this game in a good a possible shape as you could be, it seems to me.
Yeah, absolutely flying, basically, Leicester at the moment. They're playing just like last season. The goals they're scoring it's not the odd tapping. Vardy, I know he's scoring a lot and he's on a real run, but the goals he's scoring are fantastic. Volleys, control, one-touch, bang, goal. Slimani started scoring as well. Ndidi is turning into a proper footballer in midfield. A couple of long-range goals as well. They are flying as a club. They've got the confidence back. They've got the swagger back as well from last season. And yes, of course, we lost at the weekend against Everton in a crazy game, but we do rest a couple of players. They're going to be missing one or two in the game in Madrid. They're going to be missing Captain Morgan, which is going to be a big, big loss. Balogun will probably deputise for him, but that's a big loss. But again, like I said, the club is flying and looking forward to it. And you can see, even on Sunday, that the players, they're just like last season, the style of play. And there's only one change in personnel, really. I mean, whether Okazaki will play or Slimani will play, that'll be interesting. But they go there in really good form. And they're obviously playing a bit of an upgrade on Seville. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Madrid are an upgrade on them. And it's going to be difficult. They've got those one or two star players that maybe Seville didn't have, the likes of Griezmann, Torres, etc. So it's going to be really tough, but we couldn't be in better form, even after the defeat at weekend.
I think you used the word there that got my attention, to be honest with you, Peter, swagger. And I think that's the defining factor, really. It's the thing you need going into games like this. We'll come on to the defeat at the weekend in a minute, but the feeling that there's a bounce about everybody is I think the most important thing. And I think it's the thing that, you know, the only way that Leicester will get a result is by having that sort of having that presence and that self-confidence and that belief.
Oh yeah, and you have to earn it. See, when you have teams who win things and they are entitled to go out on the pitch and believe that they are as good as they are and have that swagger and that confidence and that bit of arrogance, really. And then you got some teams who maybe don't and do that. And that's what annoys fans. You know, you say, well, hang on, you can't be that sort of player or because we haven't won things or we're not as good. They're not as good as you think or as they think. But Leicester, because they've done what they did last year, they're entitled to do that. And that's why in the last 4 or 5 games, they've got the victories under the belt. They've pulled away from the relegation zone. So they're not fully safe, but they pretty much are. So they're entitled to knock the ball around a bit and take shots from distance that they might not have done before or play with a lot more confidence and that swagger, which they have been recently. The two home victories, I mean, it was a hard-fought victory against Sunderland, but the game against Stoke, the goals that they scored, they are fantastic goals. And again, it's not a team who were fighting relegation. They are full of confidence. They could have been at the top of the league. They could be in Champions League positions. No, they are where they are. But they're playing, in my opinion, along with the likes of Tottenham and Chelsea, they are just not only the informed team, if you look at a form table, but out on the field, they just reek of confidence.
Yeah, you mentioned that Atletico Madrid are an upgrade on Sevilla, and of course that's right in terms of how they performed recently in the league, but it must bore you as well how when you were on top against Sevilla, they looked like they couldn't cope with what was being asked of them, and that's what I took from, you know, at times even away from home, but especially the home game in terms of the style of play, what Leicester would do. And Sevilla looked like they'd not seen much of that sort of thing before, and so, you know, Atletico Madrid are playing in the same league, used to a similar style, if you like, to Seville, so it must kind of get you excited to think about, well, if we can do it, if we can get into similar sorts of areas to try and hurt them, then Atletico Madrid are probably not going to enjoy it much either.
That's true. I mean, the game against Seville away, we were, well, desperate, really, and the 2-1 defeat was a miracle result, so we won't go there and play the same as we did in Seville. We'll be a lot better. Because it couldn't really be much worse. But the problem is they are a lot better than Seville, who I thought were very disappointing over the two legs. But the key with the first leg, it's obvious. If you get a goal, brilliant. If you're behind by one or two, it's not the end of the earth. What you don't want is you don't want to do an Arsenal. And that's, well, in quite a lot of ways. But in the game against Bayern Munich, where the game's over, the tie's over, and then you've got the home leg. What we want is to still have something to play for by the time they turn up at the King Power, because we know from last season, A, it's a very loud stadium. I've never heard it so loud as it was against Seville. It was unbelievable. The atmosphere was white hot. And I think that had an effect. I think it really did have an effect.
Of course.
Maybe not on the Seville players, but on the Leicester players. Because they came off that pitch crawling. Vardy came off and you could see his knees buckling, because he's run himself into the ground. And that's what we want. But the problem is, if you're 5 goals down, it's not going to happen. So for me, a goal would be great, but they don't want to be more than 2 goals behind. You know, everyone was saying against Seville, a 2-1 would be great, which it turned out to be, personally, against Atletico. If it's 3-1, it's not the end of the earth.
Yeah, it is all about sort of the experience. What you don't want to be doing is, as you say, you want the night out, if you know what I mean. We all want the night out. That's part of what we're in it for. At any level of football, really, you want the night out.
Oh, definitely.
You know, Pete, I think that they can definitely get that if they can keep it together. But defending well will be the first test.
Oh, definitely. And when we played in Basel, and everyone was, it was red hot, and everyone had a really good time. I was over in Copenhagen, and the place was actually jumping. Madrid is going to be rammed full of Leicester fans. It's going to be blue all over. There's many people, like I said, going the day before, or even a couple of days before. And I mean, the flights are an absolute disgrace. I had to get there and that, but it's part of the city, and it's what they're all enjoying for the first time. Many of us, as fans of Leicester, have seen them abroad. Obviously, it's a bigger club, you know, you can pick and choose, but we just have to make it. You know, we have to be there because this is the time of our lives as being a Leicester fan. We could be mid-table in the Championship in 3 years' time. And if we are, then, you know, it's not the end of the earth. It's just how the football cycle works. So we've got to enjoy these moments. And believe me, we are.
just on that, all action 4-2 at Goodison at the weekend. You mentioned there you could be in the Championship mid-table in 3 seasons' time. I think the most likely outcome this season is actually that Leicester finished top half of the Premier League, which wasn't looking likely prior to Ranieri's sacking, regardless of the result against Everton at the weekend.
Definitely. I think that we will finish in the top half. Teams like Watford, I think, will be over above them, and deservedly so. I mean, it's incredibly tight. I think the entire bottom half of the Premier League are looking over the shoulders, which is amazing. But it was a very strange game against Everton. You know, you've got a nice pitch, you've got the weather as well. One strange factor, I mean, what was Slimani wearing gloves for? It was 23 degrees, what's going on?
That's as hot as it gets in Liverpool, you need to tell him.
Yeah, and it was very strange because Everton, obviously, they are still chasing European football, but effectively the reins are off. It's go and enjoy yourself, lads. And with Leicester, it was kind of the same. You've got half a team saying, right, you go out there and show me what you can do. And the other half are full of confidence because they've been playing week in, week out on this incredible run we've had. So you have two teams full of confidence with, you know, a little bit of pressure taken off them because of their league positions and because of their status in the squad. And that's what we saw. That's why we saw a great game of football. Very open. And I think the scoreline was probably about right, really, to be fair. So maybe 4-3, I think, towards the end. I think that would have probably been an even better scoreline. But I think they deserve the 3 points, Everton. Obviously, when they got Lukaku, that's really different. But, I don't think it's going to dent Leicester's confidence. The only problem is, once again, the FA and the broadcasters have only one team left, and we are the last team to play at the weekend. Obviously, we weren't going to play Monday night because that one's happened, but it was the latest game that we could play before Europe. When in Germany, they rearranged the game so they play on either Saturday morning or Friday night.
Do you do it in...
Why do we do this?
Do you do it,
it
in Spain?
It could be Chelsea
well?
In this position.
Yeah, they do it in Spain as well. They look after the teams much better in terms of Europe, and I've never understood it. I mean, what difference would it make for Everton and Leicester to have kicked off it, you know, even at 1:30, to give you more time to get back and to rest and things like that? It's crazy.
But also, Spurs could have easily played Watford at half. What makes no odds to Spurs? Spurs-Watford could have been the 4:00.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And then that's the 1:30.
Oh yes, it's and again, it's the first time we've been in this position as fans, Leicester. But this could be easily succeeding with Man United or Arsenal or whoever in Europe. It should be created on that. Because fans won't care. Fans of other clubs, they'll understand.
Yeah. It doesn't affect you whatsoever. You wouldn't even notice as a fan of another club. You wouldn't even, that's just when your game is. You know what I mean? It's not something that comes in. I certainly think that they should be looking after the clubs better in Europe, and I think it would make a bit of a difference. But I'm sure come kick off against Atletico Madrid, it's not going to be on your mind.
A few surveys
in the sun and all that.
There's a hell of an undercover market, so, Pete. You get something lovely to eat. And there's loads and loads of
it.
What was I going to say to you? I was going to ask you one quick little thing as a prediction, actually, to close it all off. Pete, give me your prediction over the two legs.
I think I like the look of a 3-1 over there. I think they will score. They will try and get it done and dusted, but I think we'll grab a goal. I'm going to have to sit on my hands because I'm in the home. And I think by the time they get back to Leicester, I think that in the second half at King Power Stadium, we will still be in the game. Now, whether we will need a goal to get the equaliser or whatever, but I still think we'll be in it in the second half of the second leg. And that's all you can ask for. I think we'll lose over in Madrid. And then hopefully get an early goal at home and the crowd behind them and see how it goes. But it's going to be very difficult to get through. But they've done Leicester proud, they've done English football proud. But I just hope this isn't the end. But if it is, then there we go. And again, I just want them to get a goal in Madrid and get them worried.
Excellent stuff. Always good to speak to Pete Selby. That's Leicester. That's our upbeat moment. We're going to go and talk about Middlesbrough now. Sorry to everybody. And on to Middlesbrough. Got Hayley McQueen with us. And last time we spoke, Hayley, you were willing them to split the points with Manchester United and beat them. That didn't happen. And there's been no good news, good cheer since then. A point at the weekend against Burnley. You don't want to say things like it consigns Middlesbrough at this stage, but it looks really hard to see how they get past at least two of Palace, Hull and Swansea.
Yeah, and obviously every game's must win. And it's silly that sound like that one must win game. You're having to win games at Hull, and you've got to beat teams like Burnley, and especially with Middlesbrough and the running that they've got coming up as well, because the opposition ahead, it's definitely not looking easy for them. And if it happens to come down to the final day of the season with Middlesbrough away at Anfield, I'm hoping something will be decided before then. We could be in serious trouble, wouldn't we?
Well, I mean, our hope would be that you'd be finished by then, to be honest with you, Hayley. But you know what I mean? I've got to either safe and being out for a week or down and being out for a week would be my ideal for the Middlesbrough players at that stage. But it is, as the appointment to Steve Agnew made any noticeable difference, I don't think Middlesbrough would have got beat 4-2 at Hull under Karanka, but I still think they would have got beat, if you see what I mean.
Yes, quite. I think there's a big difference with a couple of things. I think confidence, and I think the team are now playing for Steve Agnew. Yes, they could have had a bigger name coming in to try and help them with the rest of the season. Like Sam Allardyce, who's doing obviously very well at Crystal Palace or someone like that, but they wanted to keep a bit of consistency. So that's why they went with Steve Agnew. He brought in somebody like Jonathan Woodgate, who's younger, who, you know, he's a friend of the players, which again could have been something that might not have worked because you have to kind of, you know, get that barrier up as well between being a former player and then suddenly becoming their coach. And Joe Jordan, who is a very strict disciplinarian and an excellent number two. So, yes, the three of them, I like them all, I know them all. Popular for me may not have been the most popular with the fans because they wanted somebody to come in, but, you know, unless you give them an actual magic wand, I don't think they're going to get anything more out of the players than Steve Agnew is doing at the moment. They definitely have looked more threatening going forward. Hopefully they're going to use Patrick Bamford towards the end of the season, but again, adding a lot of pressure to a player who already had a lot of pressure on his shoulders when he came into Middlesbrough. He'd made just 4 starts in 18 months when he signed in January. That was at 3 different clubs. He's had no consistency, but brought off from the bench at the weekend, and he definitely made a difference. So you've got Agnew playing with 3 at the back as well, packing the midfield. Bamford comes on. They had 12 shots, dominating possession. So things look like they're going better. They just couldn't quite manage it in a final third. And actually just trying to score a goal is just, it's becoming a bit of a joke now, isn't it? When it's not a joke that I like hearing or seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it's only 22 goals all season, isn't it? And that must be playing on the players' minds a little bit as well. You know, it's in terms of confidence, in terms of, you know, belief that they can do it, really. You see one just bounce wide and you think, oh, again, you know, is it going to be another one of those days? That must be kind of playing on their confidence.
Yeah, it's like, how many games can you be unlucky? I keep hearing the word unlucky. This particular match at the weekend, I definitely think they were unlucky, for sure. But I do think they look like they're putting in more effort. I do think they look like they're a little bit more committed. I've heard from people at the training ground that actually they're not feeling too down and out about where they are in the table. And when I was having a look at their running, actually, unfortunately, they have the worst running of the bottom 5 sides currently right now. But in the reverse fixtures, they've done not too badly. Now, this is the team Middlesbrough, but they've only won 3 games in the league this season, 3 games in the Premier League. So if they don't stay up, they don't deserve to stay up. You can't win 3 games up until this point in the season and expect not to be in the relegation places.
They haven't won since the 17th of December. That's what I was reading before. They haven't got a win since the 17th of December. And I think that's for, you mentioned confidence and luck and all that sort of stuff, Hayley. We often talk across these shows about your footballers and you're looking around at each other and these are all the lads you haven't won with since the 17th of December. And that must be really hard to then say, no, today's the day. And maybe someone like Bamford can make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. And they've been unlucky with the back three. Obviously, I actually went to a back three. You can only do with, you know, what you know, the squad that you've got. What's he going to do? He's not been left with anything different. They didn't make major signings in January. Obviously, they've got Bamford in, but they're not even playing him. So it is just a bit of a mess. But maybe they'll draw on a bit of confidence when they look at the running of the games. They've obviously got Arsenal. Now, they drew against Arsenal in the reverse fixture.
Yeah.
2 of those 3 wins were actually against Bournemouth and Sunderland, and they have both of those coming up. They drew against Manchester City, so they picked up points against them, and that's who they have. There was actually just a narrow defeat against Chelsea. If Chelsea have won the league by then and things are looking good, maybe they could look to potentially nick a point at Chelsea. It was a narrow defeat against Southampton. Obviously, they lost terribly. Paul, it was like 3-0, 3-1, something like that. I don't think they scored past Liverpool, did they?
No, it was 3-0.
I mean, it's not looking good, but you've got to draw some kind of positives out of the reverse fixtures, and that's all that I'm doing. That's the only hope that I'm giving them right now.
Well, it looks, I mean, you know, if we do want to look forward, the Arsenal game, you've got to sort of take what you get and go from there and see if they can scrap through. And Monday night, hopefully a bit of atmosphere. But it is those two, isn't it? Bournemouth away and Sunderland at home.
Yeah.
That's where, if they take 6 points out of those two, then they may well be able to say, right, this is the plan, this is the argument, we've got a game in hand, this is how we're going to do this. To me, that's what they're hanging on in for, really, at this point, is 6 points from those two. And if that doesn't happen, then I think it just looks practically impossible.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you've pretty much summed that up, haven't you? So, again, they are must-win games. I mean, so much importance now placed on that Sunderland game. Sunderland, for me, are obviously already down. I know they have, in the last few seasons, managed to turn things around and just about save themselves by the skin of their teeth. I don't think that's going to happen this time. So I think as far as a North East derby goes, I can see Middlesbrough coming out on top of that and actually needing the points more than than Sunderland. And I mean, Middlesbrough have got a lot more confidence than Sunderland do at the moment.
On the you mentioned Steve Agnew before, that you know he's reintroduced Downing back into the squad. He's gambled a little bit on Gestede. It's going to be a direct route, I think. I think there's going to be a lot of playing to Rudy Gestede's unlikely height, and hope he wins his headers, wins his knockdowns, and picks up the bits. But that's a way to play, and maybe that's something that was lacking with Karanka, which was there was no attacking identity really. There was just lads running around.
Yeah, no, definitely, and I think Steve Agnew's got a plan. I'm not saying that Ivor Karanka didn't have a plan, but what he thought was going to work, he would stick with even if it wasn't working. And he was quite stubborn like that, and I think that was a real, real problem. And when the players are sitting down thinking, well, you keep doing this, and this isn't working, and we're not attacking in the way that we would like to. And I think, obviously, that's when it started causing problems, and there were arguments, and there were issues, and you know, Jimmy Downing was a bit of a mouthpiece, and that's somebody who Steve Agnew has drawn against. You know, he's a very... he is quite a motivator as well, Jimmy Downing, and the younger lads obviously looking up to him, but Karanka stuck with his Negredos and the Spaniards and the players that he thought were going to bring them out of trouble. I don't think, to me, at the moment, Negredo... he's had a good few chances in the game against Burnley, as he did against Swansea, but just not quite good enough. He's just not playing. How do I put this without completely slating him as a person? I just don't think he understands how important it is to just the area and to Middlesbrough and to the fans. You just think, well, he's getting his chance to play for a season in the Premier League. Obviously, Karanka gave him a chance when nobody else did. But does he really care? Or from what I'm hearing from the training ground, he's not putting enough effort in and he's not caring enough. I think him in his mind is like, well, we're going down, not the end of the world. Yeah. Well, it is to some of the other players.
Well, you'll get his move, and I think that you often see that at this stage of the season. If you're Negredo, you know you're going to get your move, and I think that's worth, you know, that's where it can become a bit awkward, because for instance, if you're Grant Ledbetter, you may never play Premier League football again. He looks a tidy player to me, but you know it might just never happen for him again. Whereas if you're Negredo, you're thinking, well, I'll get a move somewhere else. It'll be all right.
Yeah, no, exactly. Actually, look, Agnew put Negredo on the bench. He's got Traore to bring off the bench next time around. He probably will start him against Arsenal. I think he was the player that they were lacking, certainly in the first half for Middlesbrough. Bamford changed the game when he came on. Stick with the back three, which I think is what he's going to do, but because, well, they have injuries, and wasn't just tactically against Burnley, they thought that was going to work. I mean, they're not Chelsea, right? So playing with the back three, it could come monumentally unstuck in a game against Arsenal. Or we'll just see what we'll see what he comes out with. But again, Steve Agnew and his team can't wave a magic wand. We can all but hope of it.
It's going to take hope at this stage, John. John, just very quickly, because we've spoken to, we've done Swansea and Middlesbrough, Burnley and Leicester throughout this one. Just very quickly, John, who do you think is going to go down?
I think Middlesbrough will go, sorry. I think Middlesbrough goes, obviously Sunderland look gone. And aside from that, I'm finding it really, really hard to pick. I would have said Swansea, but speaking to Guito about the run that they've got, there is kind of winnable games there. So maybe Hull need to be looking over the shoulder a little bit more than what I thought.
Okay. Thank you very much to everyone, four callers who've taken the time this week on 50-50 Football. It's been great to speak to absolutely everybody. Thanks very much to Hayley for the end here. And we'll be back with more of this stuff on Thursday, looking ahead to the weekend.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.